An Osho Talk.
Om Mani Padme Hum. Responses to questions.
Number 20.
Can you please talk about the art of nourishing oneself with love? I feel so much love for you. Is this enough?
Love is never enough. There are mysteries in existence which don't have any limitations. Love is the closest experience to understand all those mysteries because as far as the mind is concerned, it imposes limits. It cannot accept anything that is unlimited. Just think of the whole universe. The mind can conceive it is very vast. Perhaps the boundaries of it are not available to us, but the mind finds it intrinsically impossible to conceive that there may be no boundaries at all anywhere. The universe has no boundaries. Life has no boundaries, and love is our closest experience of this unbounded, unlimited. Pure space extending and extending, and you never come to the point where it is written, this is the end. Because of this intrinsic incapacity of the mind, it always inquires, is it enough? It wants it to be enough so that it can create a boundary around it. And anything that can be limited by the mind becomes an object. Love is not an object. You cannot put it on the scientist's table to dissect it, to find out of what basic elements it is made of. Because the scientist cannot make love objective, there are only two possibilities for him. If he is authentic and sincere, he will say, "I do not know love." Because his way of knowing is only objective, and love cannot be reduced to an object. But if he is not a sincere scientific mind, but a fanatic, rather than accepting his own ignorance, he would deny the existence of love itself. He will say it is all imagination, it is all emotion, it is all sentimentality. It is not even worth considering. There is not even a single treatise on love written by any scientists. But that is his general attitude about love, about life, about consciousness. Anything that he cannot hold in his hand, he simply denies its very existence. You cannot ask a scientist, "Does beauty exist?" Is there something like blissfulness? Is there a possibility of an inner ecstasy? His answer is going to be consistently no. Basically, he denies the inner world of man. And the most hilarious part is that scientists fall in love. That scientists feel hurt if insulted. If there is nobody inside, what does it matter? Whether somebody insults you, abuses you, and if love is not existential, then no scientist should dare to fall in love. But the scientist is only one-dimensional being. Science is not his whole life and cannot be. Life contains many dimensions, the most important is the fact, the interiority of man. And the interiority of man is as infinite as the exterior universe. Love is part of the interiority of man. It has no limits. But there are misunderstandings which have to be clarified. Your question is, can you talk about the art of nourishing oneself with love? There is no art, because there is no need of any effort. Love is the nourishment, but humanity has been so confused by its leaders that one does not know the most inner realms of one's own being. Love is nourishment in itself. The more you love, the more you will find untrodden spaces, where love goes on and on spreading around you like an aura. But that kind of love has not been allowed by any culture. They have forced the love into a very small tunnel. You can love your wife, your wife can love you, you can love your children, you can love your parents, you can love your friends. And they have made two things so deeply rooted in every human being that love is something very limited. Friends, family, children, husband, wife. And the second thing they have insisted, that there are many kinds of love. You love in one kind when you love your husband or your wife, then you have to bring another kind of love when you love your children, then another kind of love when you love your elders, your family, your teachers, and then another kind of love for your friends, But the truth is, love cannot be categorized the way it has been categorized in the whole history of mankind. There were reasons for them to categorize it, but their reasons are ugly and inhuman. Because in this categorization they killed love. Either you can have a loving heart, it has nothing to do with whom you are loving. The emphasis of existence is that you are loving. It has not to be directed towards a certain person, because that is accepting that those who are not part of the direction your love is forced to move, you become indifferent to them. You become even unloving to them. There are possibilities you may become even hateful of them. The reasons why all the cultures insisted on categorization, because they have been very much afraid of love. Because if there is existential love, then it does not know boundaries. Then you cannot put Hindus against Mohammedans. Then you cannot put Protestants against Catholics. Then you cannot make a line that you cannot love this person because he is Jewish, Chinese. The leaders of the world wanted to divide the world, but to divide the world they have to do the basic division of love. Love is only for our people. And it has to be insisted so deeply in your unconscious that when you kill in wars, in riots, other people who don't belong to your clan or to your country or your tribe, you don't feel anything. It is simply the way things are. A German killing an Italian will not think that I don't have any personal enmity with him. And just as my wife will be waiting for me, and my old mother may be praying for me, and my children will be hoping soon I will be back home. The person I am killing is in the same situation. He has also a wife. He has also old parents. He has also children. And they are waiting for him to come back. And I don't have any reason to kill him. Neither he has any reason to kill me, except that some idiotic politicians are not satisfied with the power they have. They want more power. They want to be world conquerors. Because of this lust for power, love has been completely destroyed. Both cannot exist together. I want it absolutely clear to you that lust for power and the beauty of love cannot exist together. But religions would like you only to love people of your own religion. Others are foreigners and countries would like you to love only the people who live in that country. And you can see there are divisions upon divisions. This country became independent in 1947. I was too young but I have kept my eyes as clear and as uncontaminated by the older generation. From my very childhood I have insisted to have my own insight, my own intelligence, and I don't want to borrow any knowledge from anybody. My whole family was involved in the struggle for the freedom of the country. Everybody has been into jail. Although I was never in the jail for the liberation movement, but I suffered as much as one can suffer, because all the earning males were forced into jails and the family was left without any sources of earning. I asked my father that, are you aware that once you are liberated from British Empire, and it is going to happen, because now Britain is burdened. They have exploited the land to the maximum. Now the situation has reversed. They held They have to help the country to survive. It is better for them to escape from here and save the burden, which will be absolutely unnecessary. They were not here to serve the people. They were here to exploit. And that's exactly happened. The revolution happened in 1942 without any effect. It was quashed completely within 9 days. And with those 9 days, all the hope of freedom disappears. But suddenly, out of the blue, Britain decided in 1947 to make the country free. I told my father that don't think that your freedom movement has succeeded, because freedom movement and the actual coming of freedom has a 5-year gap. This is not logical. You are being given freedom, because now you have become a burden and a trouble. Just your existence. And I have come to know researchers looking into the whole history in the British Parliament and their decisions, that the British Prime Minister Attlee sent Mountbatten with the message that do it as quickly as possible. He has given him time that by 1948 we should get rid of this burden. Mountbatten proved even more efficient. He managed it 1 year earlier. But I told to my father that you have been fighting not knowing that this country, once it is free, will start having new fights within itself. Now, Mohammedans have taken Pakistan. It was part and parcel of the freedom, because Mohammedans refused to live with the Hindus. They had lived almost for 1400 years, and there was no problem. In my childhood, I have participated in Mohammedan celebrations. Mohammedans were participating in Hindu marriages, Hindu celebrations. There was no question of fight, because everybody was fighting the British Empire. Once the British Empire was leaving, suddenly the Mohammedans and Hindus became alert. A new division, that we cannot live together, our religions are different. And Mohammedans became adamant that either British Empire remains, we can risk freedom, but we cannot live with Hindus in an independent country, because they are in majority and they will rule, and Mohammedans don't have any chance of ruling. The situation became so ugly that there were only two alternatives: either accept the slavery which the British Empire was not ready, or to accept the division. The division was accepted. The country was divided into two parts. The Mohammedan part became Pakistan, but they were not aware, neither Indians were aware, that Mohammedans got two parts. One part in the east, Punjab and Sindh, where they were in majority, and another part far away, thousands of miles away, in Bengal. Half of the Bengal was Mohammedan. So Pakistan became a strange country, and immediately both were Mohammedans, but Bengalis saw that they are being dominated by the Punjabi Mohammedans. And the shift from the division of religions was immediate. It became a question of language. Bengali Mohammedan speak Bengali. The Punjabi speaks Punjabi. Now they forgot completely that they have been together in the fight to gain Pakistan. And finally, the Bengalis separated from Pakistan and created a new country, Bangladesh. The distance was so much that it was impossible for Pakistan to keep control over it. But the same situation goes on happening every day. For 40 years, the constitution has decided that Hindi should be the national language, but it has not been implicated, because in India there are 30 languages. Taken as a whole, the Hindi-speaking people are the majority. But if those 29 languages stand against, then they are in majority. Each single language is not capable to fight Hindi, but those 29 languages together are a tremendous force. Now, you cannot believe that they are all Hindus and they have been killing Hindus because they speak different languages. And it is not a question that if you can give all these 30 languages the status of a national language, then suddenly you will find, for example, Hindi is spoken in one way in one state, in another state in a slight different way, and there are 5 states. Soon they will be fighting that our Hindi is the right Hindi and the others are only distortions. Man has been trained to cut humanity into as many pieces on any excuse. Religion, country, language, color, but the basic root is to teach human beings that love is a limited phenomenon, and secondly, that love has varieties. I am trying to say to you that love has no varieties. It may have different expressions. Certainly, the love between a husband and wife will have a different expression than the love between the couple and their children. It will have a different expression, but the expression does not change the quality. It is the same love. And its center is not the other. That's how we have been told that the center of love is the other. You love somebody, the emphasis has to be completely changed. It is not a question of loving somebody, it is a question of being a loving human being. Love should not have an address. It should be simply a radiation of your being. Whoever comes in contact with you will find the immensely nursing energy of love. You are saying, I feel so much love for you. I would like you to feel the same love for the whole existence. For the trees and for the birds and for the oceans and for the stars, your love should not be confined. You can love me as much as you want, but that does not mean that I should become the only object of your love. Then it is not nourishing. On the contrary, it starts becoming a poisoning force. Love is a nourishing force if it spreads all around, just the way the sun rises and it falls, its light, its rays to all the trees without any discrimination, not thinking that this is just a poor marigold, just a little bit less will do. This is a beautiful rose, a little more. This is a lotus, shower as much as you can. No, the sunlight showers over the whole planet without any discrimination. Your love should become subjective, not objective. It should become a radiation from the center of your being to all the directions. Then it is nourishing, and then it has a certain quality which can only be called divine. Our so-called love only creates jealousy, only creates conflict, only creates two people living in intimate enmity, judging, looking, watching. Just look on the road and you can decide without asking anybody, the couple who is moving, whether they are husband or wife or just boyfriends, girlfriends. I have never seen husband and wife together smiling. What kind of love is this? Yes, they are both detecting each other. The husband cannot look around if a beautiful woman passes by. Just looking at that beautiful woman can create so much harassment that it is not worth. What kind of society you have created? Is it human? It is absolutely human that if a beautiful woman passes by, the husband should tell to his wife, "Look, a beautiful woman." Beauty should not be made a question of jealousy or comparison. You can say that the rose flower is beautiful and your husband or your wife will not object to it. Because you can't have any relationship with it. Just the other day I was listening to a song of one of the most beautiful singer of India. The meaning of the song is that I was just passing from here and I thought just to say hello to you. Although I know if my wife comes to know about it, this hello is going to be very dangerous. Because her insistence is you should not see anybody else except me. Your whole love is monopolized by me. And the singer says, his name is Jagjit Singh, that is her insistence and my hobby is that wherever there is beauty, I should at least be respectful to it. We have created an idea of love as a possession, and all kinds of possessions ultimately turn into poisons. One should live a life non-possessive, available, open, respectful, because there is so much beauty around you and so many different ways the beauty is expressing itself to confine you is to destroy you. And remember, anyone who confines you, you are not going to be loving to that person. Husbands don't love their wives. Wives don't love their husbands. How can a wife love a husband who has confined his infinite capacity of radiating love and forced her that he is the only one, that all his love should be directed to? This is insulting, and this is against nature, against existence. But religions have been doing everything to destroy the individuality of man. It seems to be that without destroying man, they cannot exist. Either man can exist in its dignity, are your so-called churches and popes and priests, they can exist with great power. Just the other day, I could not believe, but I have to believe because it is a fact. Anando has brought me a news piece that the Catholic Church has decided that in the churches there will not be any other kind of music than the one that is absolutely devoted to the church. Even in weddings, and it has been going on for centuries, it is not something new. Even the classical music and the geniuses of the past are no more allowed in the church. In a church wedding, the music should be only approved by the church, and its function should be religious. No other music . Why these people are afraid of people becoming light, rejoicing, enjoying? They have a certain investment in your misery. The more miserable you are, the better. Because only the miserable people go to the churches. Only the miserable people are in the bondage of the past, only the miserable people are in the domination of the dead. A man who is alive can be alive only if he is allowed total expression of his individuality. Who are these people to decide? On what authority these people go on deciding things for millions of people? A very strange strategy has been used. First they invented the God, then they invented his son Jesus Christ, now they have imposed themselves as his representative. Only they have the direct line to God. Catholic Church has prohibited few months before that nobody should confess to God directly. He has to confess to the priest everything through the right channel. Then the priest will inform Jesus Christ. Then Jesus Christ will persuade God the Father that let this poor man be freed from his sin. But directly you cannot confess to God. And not a single Catholic in the whole world revolted against the idea. At least man should be given the freedom to be in direct relationship with existence. But the business point is clear. Unless you confess to the priest, the priest cannot punish you. And what is the punishment? $5, $10. And I don't understand how these dollars reach to Jesus Christ. And then he gives the bribe to God the Father that just forgive this man. He is a good man. Just see, he has sent $10. Those $10 disappear in the pocket of the priest. They have nothing to do with Jesus Christ or with God. I have heard that one rabbi and one bishop were very friendly. And the friendship has arisen because both are golf lovers. They have decided that the next Sunday they are going to the golf club. The rabbi waited and waited outside the church, but it was getting late, so he entered the church. The bishop was in the confession booth. It is a small room, partitioned. On one side sits the bishop with a small window. On the other side stands the confessor. The strategy is that the confessor should not be made embarrassed. His face should not be seen, so that he can confess wholeheartedly. Because unless he confesses wholeheartedly, he is not going to be contributing dollars wholeheartedly either. The rabbi entered in the booth and said to the bishop that we are getting late. The bishop said, I am doing everything as quick as possible, but there is standing still a queue. The rabbi said, just let me see what you are doing, then you get ready. Meanwhile, I will function, because nobody can see from the other side. I don't know what is this confession. The bishop said, it is very simple. One man came and he said, I have committed a rape. The bishop said, don't be worried. Just contribute $10 in the charity box and I will pray for you. The rabbi said, it is very simple. You go, you get ready. He sat in the bishop's chair. Another man came and he said, I have committed 2 rapes this week. The rabbi said, my son, don't be worried. $30. The man said, $30? Has the rate increased? Just in front of me, for one rape, $10. The rabbi said, don't be worried. You just put $30 in the box, $10 for advance. These are the people who have destroyed everything that is beautiful in man, but they are exploiting and they will cling to their exploitation to the very last. Otherwise, There is no reason for all these organized religions to exist. Each individual should have a direct contact with the universe, its beauty, its tremendous glory, which creates without any effort a gratitude, a prayer, perhaps a song, a dance. If we can remove all these organized religions from the world, organized nations from the world, and allow each individual his dignity and respect, there will be immense love, immense respect, immense understanding, and we can change this ugly world which has been created by the past into a beautiful garden where everyone can rise to its potential height, can shower his flowers and can release his fragrance. I stand for the individual. All organizations have proved criminal. There is no need of any organization, either in the name of politics or in the name of religion or in any other name. And the world will be an ocean of love, an ocean of beauty, but this needs a tremendous courage to revolt and assert your individuality, whatever the consequences. It is enough time that we have been exploited, sucked, destroyed, and the end result is this miserable world where once in a while perhaps you can smile, but even that smile does not come from your deepest core, where once in a while you can love. But even that love is surrounded by all kinds of fears. Nothing has been left in you in freedom. And the people who have done this greatest crime are the people you worship. That makes it more difficult to take out humanity from their clutches. You have to learn to love yourself first, to respect yourself first, and then certainly it will give you tremendous nourishment. And it will start spreading around you.
Why does spontaneity create so much fear in me? Having no structure feels like a death. How can I turn this fear into a let go, a welcome, a rejoicing?
Perhaps you are not aware that you are again asking for another structure. I will read your question so that you can become conscious what you are asking. Why does spontaneity create so much fear in me? It creates fear in everybody. Because spontaneity means you are taking the responsibility for your act, whatever it may be. If you rely on the conditionings by your parents, by your teachers, professors, priests, leaders, and instead of being spontaneous, just act out of your past conditioning, there is not fear, because you know you are not alone. You know your action is approved. The fear arises when you find yourself alone and you are doing something which goes against the whole training. You know you are revolting. You are going against your parents. You are going against the whole heritage of humanity. The weight of the past is so big and huge, so Himalayan, that you seem to be such a small individual, afraid going against it. You may be crushed. In my childhood, I loved having as long hairs as possible. My father had a shop and the house together. And I used to move in and out through his shop. And he felt very embarrassed because people asked him, "Whose girl is this? So long hairs in India are allowed only to the girls. And naturally, he felt embarrassed and angry that I am creating every day some trouble. Finally, he became so angry that he took his scissors, caught hold of me and cut my hairs. I said, "You can cut my hairs, but remember, I'm not going to leave it at that." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "You will see tomorrow." And I went just in the other line of the road were all the hair cutting saloons. I had a friend, an old opium addict. And I loved the man because sometimes he will cut somebody's half mustache and will say, "Wait, I have to go somewhere." And hours, and the man is caught because he cannot leave with the half mustache. Sometimes people will ask him to save and he will save their heads. And by the time they became aware, he has already done some work. Now there is no point to prevent him. And he was such a nice man. He will say, "There is no need to worry. If you don't like it, don't pay me anything." I used to sit in his small saloon discussing with him because it was a joy to discuss with him. He used to come with really original ideas. One day he told me that all the opium addicts of India are organized. We can take over the whole country. I said, "The idea is very good." He said, "But you will have to help, because these opium addicts don't listen to anybody." I said, "I will try to contact first in this town all the opium addicts. Let us create one small organization here if it succeeds to take over the municipal corporation, so I went to him because he was the only man who could have done this in India. A child's head is completely 7 only if his father dies. So I told him, that I am tired with these big hairs, you simply shave them completely clean. For a moment he hesitated. He said, your father will be very angry, I am telling you. I said, you don't be worried. It is my responsibility. And you are the only man of guts. No other barber is going to cut my hairs. So he said, okay. He finished all my hairs. And I entered my father's shop, looking at me. Immediately his customers asked, what happened to this poor boy? His father has died? Now it was even more embarrassing for him to accept that I am the father. He came to me inside and he said, this is too much. I said, I have warned you. Whenever I do anything, I do it totally. From now onwards, if you interfere with me, remember, I can move to the other extreme. That was the last time he interfered with me. He knew perfectly well that this is going to be dangerous. People from the neighborhood started coming to inquire that. And when they will see my father, they said, what is the matter? You are alive? And I have seen with my own eyes your son completely saved. From my school, my teachers, my headmaster, seeing that my father must have died, were very sorry. They told me that we are going to your house to express our sadness and our mourning. Your father was a good man. And I allowed them to go. And when they will see my father sitting there, they were in such a strange situation, what to do? Because it has never happened. And my father will ask, why you have come? There must be some reason. They will say, there was. but your son is so strange that we were telling him that he was a good man and he did not even tell us that he is still alive. Spontaneity means you are acting in the moment, not reacting, but acting. That is the difference between those two words. When you react, it comes from your past accumulation of knowledge, experience. But when you respond, it is pure act out of your present consciousness, not from memory. These are two different sources within you. Memory is comfortable because everybody will appreciate you are doing the right thing because they also have the same memory. But if you act on your own, then you are taking a risk. It may not fit. Most probably it is not going to fit with the structure which has been created around you. Hence fear arises. But I would say to you, it is better to suffer fear rather than to remain a slave of those who had no idea in what situations you are going to be. And they have given you fixed ideas, answers about questions which they don't know in what form the question is going to be in your life. Now 5,000 years before they wrote Rig Veda, and Hindus are still following the structure. It is no more relevant. But the same is the situation everywhere. Muhammad allowed Mohammedans to have 4 wives. It was perfectly right at that moment. Because in Arabia, the proportion was exactly 1 man, 4 wives. Because men were continuously being killed, they were continuously fighting, war was their life. They will rape the woman, but they will not kill. That was not according to their culture to kill a woman. So women were 4 times more than men, and naturally it was creating a very difficult situation. If 3 women remain unmarried, there is going to be great prostitution, corruption of all kinds of things which should not be. To avoid the situation, he suggested that every man marries 4 women. It was perfectly right in Saudi Arabia 1400 years before, but they are doing the same in India even today. Now India wants lesser people. It is already past the limit. It has never been so crowded in the whole history. Just in 1947, when it became independent, the population was 400 million. And just in 40 years, the population has gone to 900 million. And by the end of this century, it is going beyond 1 billion. For the first time, India will have more population than China. And Mohammedans insist that it is their religion and the government cannot interfere with their religion. It is difficult because in India the proportion of men and women is almost equal. So they go on raping women which are not Mohammedans. And once a woman, whether raped or not, if she has been kept in a Mohammedan house, Hindus are following another tradition 5,000 years old. She has fallen. She is no more acceptable. Neither her parents will allow her into the house, nor his own husband. She has to become a Mohammedan or commit suicide. And when Mohammedans go on continuing marrying 4 women, naturally they produce 4 times more people than Hindus. Soon this country will have more Mohammedans than Hindus. Already you will be surprised to know that India has the greatest Mohammedan population in the whole world. There are Mohammedan countries, Egypt, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, but no country has greater Mohammedan population than India. And the reason is simple. Because in those countries there are only Mohammedans, and the proportion between men and women is equal. It is very difficult in a Mohammedan country to find 4 women. What will happen to three other men whose wives you have taken? So it is only in India they have a good pasture around to get more and more women and more children. To respond to the situation that is facing you needs intelligence, not memory. Needs awareness, not your past heritage. So even though it creates fear, which is natural, but decide to be spontaneous in spite of all the fears. Soon those fears will disappear. It is only a question of acting out of spontaneity more and more. And then you will see your individuality becoming more integrated, more solid, more free from all the chains that past has put over you. The fear will disappear, but it will take a little time. And if you listen to the fear, you will never be able to gain your dignity as an individual. Even trees have their individuality. Every animal has his own individuality. It is simply shameful that man has lost his individuality. So in spite of all your fears, take the risk, be courageous, and act according to your own consciousness. And soon you will see that whenever you act spontaneously, you are right. Because you are answering the situation directly. But you are asking, having no structure, feels like a death. There is no harm. Die. Your life is not much more valuable. To be a prisoner of all the deads, it is better to die spontaneously. At least you will have the dignity to say that at one point I am at least free from the whole past and all the prisons of religion, nation, race, color. And then you are asking, how can I turn this fear into a let go? And do you understand how means again? Filling your memory with a new structure. But no structure can be spontaneous. You You cannot know what is going to happen next moment. You cannot conceive what tomorrow is going to bring to you. So whatever structure you will make, whatever homework you will do, is going to be irrelevant to the situation. I have never done any homework. In my schools, colleges, universities, I made it absolutely clear to all my teachers and professors that never ask for any homework from me. And they said, but this is so strange, nobody has ever said such a thing. I said, I don't care whether anybody has said such a thing or not. One thing is certain, you can answer me, you can question me, you can do anything you want. I will be spontaneous, I will not be prepared. Homework is preparation that you have already prepared everything. The professors who loved me very much, in my final examinations of post-graduation, were so much afraid because I was not preparing anything for the examination. I was still reading in the library whatever I wanted to read. It had no concern with the examination. I was asking questions in the classes, and the professor had to say to me that now only 1 month is left and you should not bring such questions which have no relevance for your examination. I said, I am not here to be worried about an examination which is going to happen 1 month afterwards. My concern is this moment, and this is my question. One of my professors was so concerned that he gave me one of the questionnaires telling me that I have made this so that you can at least be ready for these 5 questions. They are going to be asked because I am the composer of the paper. Without reading it, throw it away, and I said, you should not insult me in this way. I want to live a life unprepared. Whether I fail or succeed, it doesn't matter. He used to come to my hostel room just 15 minutes before the examination is going to commence. Everybody has gone into the examination hall. He will pick me in his car and tell me that unless you enter the examination hall, I cannot feel at ease. I am always afraid you may be sleeping, you may be discussing things which have nothing to do with the examination. You may be reading things. And he used to say to the superintendent of the examination that don't let him out before 3 hours. And I used to answer those questions in 1 hour or 1.5 hour. And the superintendent will say that I'm sorry because I have promised your professor that I will not allow you. I said, it is up to you. If you don't allow me, going out, has he asked you that I cannot even sleep here? He said, he has not said anything about sleep. I said, that's okay. You take this paper, I am finished with it, and 1.5 hour, let me rest. When my professor came to know, he said, it is very impossible to deal with you. I prevented you to go out, but you managed to go out. And how can you answer those 5 questions in 3 hours? Others find that they have answered only 4, somebody has answered only 3. I said, they are prepared people. They have done so much preparation that they want to impress the examiner how much they are informed. I am absolutely uninformed. Sometimes I simply write 1 sentence as an answer, and sometimes I ask another question because I cannot agree that the question is right. But I am absolutely free. I have no preparation. 1 professor has asked a question. That can you define Indian philosophy? And I simply answered him that there is no such thing as Indian philosophy. So the question of defining it does not arise. There is Western philosophy, because the very word philosophy means a search for knowledge, a search for wisdom, a love for wisdom. In India, we don't have any word which can be translated as philosophy. The Indian word is darshan, and its approach is totally different. It means an inquiry to see the truth. Darshan means seeing. It is not a question of thinking. A blind man can think about the light and can be a great philosopher, can propose hypotheses about light. In India, there has never existed anything like philosophy. What has existed is seeing. We want to see the light. We don't want to philosophize about it. And just by coincidence, that paper was sent to one very eccentric retired professor, Dr. Ranade of Allahabad. Basically, he belonged to Pune. And he gave me 99% numbers out of 100 with a note to the Vice Chancellor that I always wanted somebody to answer spontaneously, and I always wanted somebody to answer as shortly as possible. He has never given to anybody else in his whole life first class. Even to pass from him was a difficult job. But he wrote the note, and he also wrote that what I am writing you should show to the student. That I loved his answers and I loved the way he made me aware that Western philosophy is one thing and there is no equivalent in India for it. He has written books on Indian philosophy and he said in his note that I am too old now to change it, but your point is absolutely right. We don't have a similar kind of thing that has happened in the West. It is because of the difference. The Western philosophy has never come to meditation. It was always contemplation. And the Indian counterpart has never bothered about thinking, contemplation, concentration. Its whole concern is meditation. In fact, they are two so different directions that a single word cannot describe both. My professor was amazed. He said, I was thinking you are going to fail. You were so unprepared.
I said, your whole idea is preparation, and my whole idea is to be simply spontaneous. And I got the gold medal, topped the whole university, shocking everybody. And as I came out of the auditorium, I threw that gold medal into the well. A professor was standing by my side. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I have nothing to do with gold. And I don't want to be appreciated as topping the whole university. I would love if somebody appreciates me that its spontaneity has its own beauty, freshness. Whether it fails or succeeds is irrelevant. You should not ask, how can I turn this fear into a let go? Because whatever I say to you will become your structure again. Just be simple. Whenever you find a situation, act. Put the fear aside. And rejoice in the spontaneous response. It is only a question a few times and you will find the fear has disappeared, because the spontaneous response gives you such a joy, such an opening of the heart, such freshness, as if you have just taken a shower. But don't ask for any strategy how to be spontaneous, because how simply means a structure. Just be spontaneous. Don't ask how. Try it. Without knowing, innocently respond to a situation, and you will learn out of it the great experience of let go, and you will rejoice because you have attained your freedom from all kinds of fears. In my childhood, I had a friend whose father was a magician. They had a very good business. the business was that they had few snakes. Being continuously in their house, slowly I learned that 97% of snakes don't have any poison. Only 3% snakes have poison, and only 1%, the cobra, is very dangerous. Once the cobra bites you, it is very difficult to save you. Death is certain. But they all look alike. And the father used to have non-poisonous snakes, and he will send his son, who was my friend, and I accompanied him many times to somebody's house, and there we will leave 2-3 snakes around. And then the father will come with his special musical instrument that is used for snakes. And he will announce that if anybody has snakes in his house, I can catch them. And as he will start playing on his instrument, the snakes that we have left around the house will start coming. And for that, the housekeeper had to pay. And he will say that it is very good of you. Once in a while you should come. Because we were not aware that in our garden there are snakes. Knowing that there are snakes which don't have any poison, I will enter into the class with a snake in my pocket. And I will just leave it on the table of the teacher, and he will stand on his chair and he will shout, "Save me!" And other students are running out, who is going to save? Except me. And I will tell him, "I will save you, but remember it, that I have saved your life. You should not be nasty with me. Promise?" And with that snake is standing on his table, you could have taken any kind of promise. Finally, it was reported to the principal that a strange thing is going on. But a principal is just the same as anybody else. When he called me, I went there with 2 snakes. and I left them on his table. And he stood on his chair. And people of the holy school were looking from the windows, what is happening? I said, now, do you have to say something to me? He said, no. Just don't bring these things in my office. I said, I had not come on my own. You have called me. And now I cannot go without promising me that you will not be nasty to me. He said, this is strange. But I promise I will not be nasty to you. I said, that's okay. Then I can persuade the snakes . People have lived with such fear. Fear seems to be always around them. Anything can create fear. And if the man was a little spontaneous, he could see that if I can manage those snakes, certainly there is some trick, there is no need to be afraid. But the very word snake is enough to trigger all the fears of centuries of humanity that you are carrying within you. My father was reported that now your son is becoming more and more dangerous. My father said, I have promised him, just as you have promised, not to interfere. Otherwise, he will start bringing those snakes in the house. What are your fears? What can you lose? The only thing that you can lose is your life. And that does not belong to you, that belongs to the universe. One day you are going to lose it. So what does it matter? In a week there are only 7 days. Either you will lose your life on Monday or on Tuesday. So it is only a question of 7 days, but I have never thought for a single moment that I have anything to lose. I don't have anything to lose. That has given me a tremendous freedom to act spontaneously, to act without any fear, to say whatever I want to say, to be against all the governments of the world, to be against all the religions of the world, and I don't think that even a shadow of fear arises in my heart. On the contrary, the more I hate these idiots, the more I rejoice. Because according to me, they are criminals. According to me, they are the greatest calamities that have happened to humanity. There is nothing to fear about these people. There is nothing to be afraid about the ghosts who are lying in their graves. But everybody is injected fear from the very beginning, so that his whole blood becomes full of fear. This fearfulness helps all these criminals to dominate you, to destroy you, not to let you live your life of love and blissfulness. As far as my sannyasins are concerned, fear should not be at all a part of their being. The fear exists in the darker corners of your being. Bring more light, bring more consciousness, bring more awareness, and the fear will disappear. A lady health inspector, after checking the sanitary conditions in Bokala's bakery, summons the proprietor. "Listen," she complains, "one of the bakers back there is throwing the dough against his bare chest to flatten it out for pizzas. That's not a so bad," says Bokala. "You shoulda be here yesterday when he make the donuts." The newly wed Greek couple is in a deep embrace. While kissing and caressing her, he whispers, "My love, now I will put it where nobody else ever has." In a frightened voice she cries, No. In my ears, never. What is there to fear? There is everything to laugh, and there is nothing to fear. Laughter has to be our sword to cut all these heads who have been torturing humanity for centuries.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.